Welcome to the Race Haven Radio Show and Podcast, your source for solutions-focused dialogue about race in America, with your host, Scott Speed.
Welcome to Race Haven Live. My name is Dr. Scott Speed, and I appreciate you being here. This is the first of a series of live shows called America, We Need to Talk, and it is designed to be a dialogue where we, you and I, can learn and communicate our way towards collective solutions to social challenges facing America. Join me here each Wednesday at 12 noon to hear my commentary on a variety of relevant topics and to share your questions, concerns, hopes, and solutions about any topic involving race and social issues in America. So what's the agenda? My agenda is clear, and yes, I have one. And the agenda is to work towards the ideal of being one nation, indivisible. That's it. So if you agree with this ideal, then we have common ground, and I want to hear from you. To join the dialogue, simply dial 929-477-4107 and press 1. So the show lineup for today is your calls. And with this being the first live show that I've done literally since over a year ago when we first started Race Haven, many of you are not aware that I'm doing live calls yet. So I've been promoting this on Facebook and our Race Haven community dialogue group, as well as on my personal page. So we'll see if anyone decides to call in and wants to speak. But if not, I have plenty of commentary, some things that I want to share about the foundational principles of the show, and a segment that I call In the Media, where I share my personal perspective about hot topics being discussed in social and news media. Today, those topics are two things: the HBCUs receiving praise from Betsy DeVos, saying that HBCUs are pioneers of school choice. She is the newly appointed head of schools in America, the Department of Education, in the Trump administration. And also, I'm going to give some commentary on that. And I'm also going to give some commentary about the backlash from a segment of African Americans that I've been seeing online in social and news media, who are upset that Moonlight won the Oscar for Best Picture. So if you want to jump in to discuss any of those things, or literally to share anything that's on your mind, just dial 929-477-4107 and press 1 so that I know that you want to speak. Okay, you can dial that number to listen. If you're on the move, if you're watching us online, listening online, and you want to call in on your, if you got to go, and you can call in and listen just by dialing that number. And if you want to listen and speak, just press 1, and I'll know that you want to talk. So with that being said, I want to jump into the foundational principles of this show. So the name, let's start with the name and the idea behind America, We Need to Talk. So basically, I've invested a lot of time over the years into becoming a better communicator in my relationships as well as in my business life. And through the investment of wanting to be a better communicator and a better, you know, friend, husband, and businessman, you know, I've learned a lot. And what I've come to the conclusion is is that I believe that literally every problem is just a result of a lack of communication. Meaning, you know, when I've had some serious, you know, confrontational issues with family members or business partners, you know, we've always been able to solve them by talking, by, you know, not being afraid of having what's called crucial conversations, not being afraid of having constructive, you know, conflict. And I believe that, again, through what I've learned, that those things are very important. And by exercising those tools and those philosophies, you know, I've been able to have healthy relationships. And, you know, there's been situations where there seemed to be, you know, some real, you know, deep misunderstandings going on. But through that dialogue and through that open communication and through, you know, confronting it, you know, we were able to get to solutions. And oftentimes it was solutions that we didn't even know we could come to. And those relationships and those bonds just got stronger and the trust got stronger. So I really, really believe in the value in talking. I believe that, you know, keeping in anger and keeping in frustration is unhealthy, and literally over communicating, you know, about hard topics is important. And I truly believe, and this is going to be one of many bold statements that I'm going to make throughout this series. And you've probably, if you've been a listener of this show, the podcast and the recordings, you've heard me say, make bold statements in the past. But I truly believe that every problem that we currently have in society as a whole is because of a lack of communication. Now, obviously, there's some motivating factors in terms of our societal structures that may limit or prohibit certain communication across certain lines. However, I believe that every problem can be solved through communication and treating each other, you know, with a level of respect and compassion and humanity. So with that being said, that's what we're going to do. This show is going to be a show about communication. Oftentimes I'm going to say something that's going to get on your nerves. I'm going to say something that's going to frustrate you. It's going to be outside of your comfort zone, but here's what I want to challenge you to do, to hang in there. And when you get frustrated, don't give up on me. Just ask questions and let's see if we can find common ground. So a couple key points about, you know, why we need to talk and some of the value of talking in addition to what I just said. That just through my relationships, again, in business where the stakes are high, as well as in my marriage, you know, that's really the most, you know, close relationship I've had in my adult life is the relationship with my wife where I've had these crucial conversations. You know, I've learned a few things. And one is that you can't be afraid to say dumb stuff, right? And also, as my background as a teacher, one of the things that I used to tell the young people, and you may have heard educators say, is there's never a dumb question, right? Literally, there's never a dumb question because, again, communication is everything. And on the other side of your questions is the path to enlightenment and growth. So there's never a dumb question. So you can call up this show and literally just if there's any assumptions that you have in your mind about race relations, I will be able to give you my perspective based on my experiences and my relationships doing this work, as well as through the relationships that I've had with the diverse groups of people in diverse settings. Also, I've learned that I cannot be afraid to be wrong. You know, being wrong is actually a good thing for problem solvers, for creatives, for entrepreneurs. You know, we live in a world in that space where being wrong is like gold, because again, answers and solutions are on the other side of being wrong. And sometimes we have to put our best thinking out there in order for someone else to put their best thinking or add their best thinking to our thinking in order for us to move forward and get to, you know, solutions. And everything's always fluid, it's dynamic. There are no absolutes, you know, everything is evolving. And, you know, unfortunately, that goes against the narrative that we were taught growing up, the indoctrination of our schooling, where, you know, we were in an environment where being right was everything. Well, in the real world, it's actually the opposite. Being wrong and making mistakes and failing and saying, quote unquote, you know, misinformed things is how you get smarter, faster, and more informed faster, and get to solutions faster and innovate faster, et cetera. So don't be afraid to ask, quote unquote, dumb questions, which I don't believe that exists. And don't be afraid to be wrong. These are things that I've learned. Also, again, I said this, it's important to get your best thinking out there in the hopes of other people improving on it. So a lot of this, of what this show is going to be, is me just putting my thoughts out there, guys, not me putting my thoughts out there in an effort to say that, you know what, I'm right. It's me putting my thoughts out there in an effort to say, I'm thinking very deeply about this. I care about this topic. And I want you, and also I've done a lot of thought and research and reading and conversating about said topics, and I want to put it out there with the hopes that some of you can provide me with me and all of the listeners with, you know, a different perspective or a different angle or a different way to look at it. So again, our thoughts and our way of living, being and doing can evolve. Okay. The other thing I've learned is that we cannot make assumptions. You know, this is one of the things that, you know, I'm constantly working on within myself to not make assumptions, but ask questions. Don't make assumptions, ask questions. So again, I'm going to ask all of you, you're going to hear me say some things that's going to go against, you know, some of your ideals. But what I'm going to ask you to do is don't make assumptions, ask questions, go deeper. Ask me why I feel that way. Ask me what underlying concerns or fears or beliefs or what have I learned to motivate me to have this belief or this perspective? Don't assume. Always ask. You know, when we make assumptions, we stop thinking, right? When we make assumptions, we stop thinking. And when we stop thinking, then we stifle growth. We stifle progress. And as people, we have to continue to think because we have to continue to progress because we have some very, very real issues facing us. And I believe that, like me, if you're listening to this show, you want to leave this world better for your children and grandchildren and pass the baton than the world we currently live in, right? So we all have to do our part. And a part of that is just thinking and growing together, right? So the other thing is that we have to hold the tension, okay? What do I mean by that? That simply means this. Oftentimes, you guys have been in relationships, right? My wife and I will have a conversation and I just get so frustrated, right? And the tension just builds up because she's saying something that goes against what I may think or what I may want at that particular time. But I hang in there. I listen, right? And I'm not always perfect at this. And my wife will tell you, I'm not always perfect at this, but I'm a work in progress as well, right? But I am consciously, when I'm listening to her, I'm thinking about these principles. I'm thinking about these ideals that I'm sharing with you today. And I'm working on it and I'm literally holding the tension and hanging in there and listening. And even when it makes me upset, I listen. And oftentimes, you know, we have to conclude that particular conversation for the time being. And then I'll go off and I'll think about what she said and it'll make more sense later. So in the moment, I may have been frustrated and I may have been upset. But there's a couple of things. One, I know that we share common ground. We both want what's best for each other and we love each other, right? So from that standpoint and that common ground right there, you know, there's a level of trust. And because we have that level of trust and we have that foundation and we share that common ground of wanting to do what's best for each other and our family, then I have to take everything that she's saying, you know, into consideration with that foundation in mind and not take it personal. And realize that we're both working towards the same goals, but we may have different ways of thinking about getting there. And then as I go off and I, you know, think about the things that she said and the reasons why she said it, et cetera, then oftentimes later on, it'll just hit me that, wow, that makes sense. And I'll include it into my perspective. It'll expand, you know, the way I see the issue. So sometimes, you know, again, within this show, you know, I want all of us to find common ground. And that common ground that I laid out at the beginning of the show when I said that I have an agenda is this: one nation, indivisible. If you believe that this world or this country, let's start here in this country, right? If you believe this country would be a better place if we were one nation and we were indivisible, then we have common ground because that's what I believe. I believe in and I believe that we need to continue to work towards that ideal. So I think that we can have a level of trust in that when we talk, even if we think about getting there in different ways, we can always fall back on that common ground and listen to one another. And then even if we don't agree in the moment, we can process it and decide whether or not we want to include it in our worldview going forward. And if we do, great. And if we don't, great. But let's dialogue. Let's talk, right? When you get upset, Just through doing this work and doing this work with Race Haven for the last 2 years, you know, especially through our Facebook group, there's people who leave all the time because they get frustrated because people have different, you know, ideals and different opinions and views on how to get to solutions on certain issues. And what I always encourage people to do is take a break from the group because this is heavy lifting. This is heavy work, right? Because we're battling so many things. We're battling, you know, all these ideals and these people who come from different backgrounds and beliefs and et cetera, as we continue to work towards being one nation indivisible. And at times it's too much to handle because life is tough. I get it. But 2 years in, guys, and I'm still here. And many of the people who are in the Race Haven group are still here. And we've expanded through the podcast and the radio show. And many of you have been listening to all the wonderful, you know, and wacky ideals of myself and John Costino and other guests who've come through the show. And some of them have resonated with you. Some of the ideals and thoughts and perspectives have resonated with you and others have pissed you off. You know how I know? Because I get the inbox messages, you know, through our Facebook group and also through my Facebook page at Scott Speed. And I get emails and et cetera. And I talk to listeners and friends and et cetera. And I get all, you know, the thoughts and ideals and the questions and et cetera. And what I realize is that there's just times where you may need to walk away, but always come back, right? And the rest of us will pick up the slack while you're gone. And then when you come back, whatever you can contribute to this mission and to this movement is greatly appreciated. So I just want to encourage all of you to hold the tension as much as you can with respect to everything that's going on in your life, and then come back and dialogue and build with us going forward. So that's the foundational principles of the show. You can call in now for those of you who are listening live. You can call in now with your questions, your perspectives, by dialing 929-477-4107. And you, if you want to speak, just press 1, and I'll know that you want to jump in. Your questions are, you know, your questions and perspectives can be about anything, okay? It could be about anything regarding race relations and the social issues that we are currently battling and dealing with here in America. So with that being said, jump in at any time. So as I continue with some commentary that I want to share with all of you, there's a few things that I want to expand on. And one of them is what I believe. There's a few things that I believe that will also be foundational principles of the show. And one of them, just to go back to the initial thing, which is the agenda. You know, I hear all the time, you know, there's a level of skepticism in America, and rightfully so, because, you know, because of the way our social structure is and our economic system is, you know, everyone has an agenda. Everyone has an agenda, right? Everyone's trying to get ahead. Everyone's, you know, because of the competitive nature of the way that, you know, our current, you know, societal structures are and systems are, everyone has an agenda. And my agenda is simply with this show and with this product is one nation, indivisible. That's it. So how have I come to that? I just want to give you guys a little background on why that resonates with me so much. And it's very simple. I've obviously, guys, you know, if you're like me and you attended school, you know, growing up, you said the Pledge of Allegiance and the national anthem every day in school. And one of the ideals of this pledge was that that we are one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. That's how we ended the Pledge of Allegiance every single day. One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I said that every day of my life in school, in compulsory education. And when I got in college, as I began to feel this level of consciousness and awareness of a desire to be a positive force in the world, or more of a calling to use whatever God-given abilities I had to be a positive force in this world, I wrote down on a piece of paper, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I wrote that down on a piece of paper. And more importantly, I was just questioning why I'm not seeing that in the world. You know, I got to the point where I said, I looked around and I just evaluated the issues of that time, which is between 1997 and 2001. That was my undergrad years. And I was looking around and just wondering, like, you know, we said this all these years, and this pledge has been around for all these years since this country, you know, has been around. But I saw so many conflicts. I saw so many conflicts to the ideal. And it was a lot of hypocrisy in America. And it frustrated me. I just didn't understand. I could not wrap my mind around why this was something that we said every single day. And it was the pledge. It was in the pledge. But yet I wasn't seeing it, you know, in society. And I just set out to say, you know, I basically from that point on, I've been just researching and digging and trying to learn whatever I could learn to move towards that ideal and figure out why we're not there and what could I do to help us get there, right? So that's why that is the foundational ideal of this show, one nation, indivisible. And when I write it out, this is what I write: one nation under God, with respect to whoever that is or isn't for each individual, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Because I believe that's a worthy ideal. And people tell me all the time, Scott, you're idealistic. Well, this country was built on ideals, right? This country was built on that ideal. That is an ideal that the country was built on, this Pledge of Allegiance, right? So let's get to it. You know, let's get to it. Let's keep working at it. That's what motivates me, is continuing to work towards that, to do my part to make sure that we get closer to that, because for whatever reason, many of you may agree and some of you may disagree, and I want to hear from you if you do, but that we haven't achieved that. And I believe it's achievable. I really do. So with that being said, we have a caller that wants to jump in and share their perspective or ask a question. So I'm going to pause on my commentary at this time to let the caller jump in to add to the show. So, caller, if you could share your name and where you're calling in from very briefly, that would be great, as well as about 1 minute. Take a minute to share your perspective or question, and we'll go from there. So your phone number is ending in 9878. All right, caller.
Hi, this is Laura Smothers.
Hi, Laura Smothers.
calling from beautiful Athens, Georgia.
Thank you for calling.
I had some thoughts about you were making the comment, all problems stem from a communication failure. And my question is, do you think that some of the conflicts surrounding race, gender, like basically everything that we're seeing in our country right now, are exacerbated simply by the fact that our current president is such a poor communicator, that it's sort of halting any hope that we kind of have of like communicating across the aisle? What are your thoughts on that?
That's a great question, Laura, and I appreciate the call and I appreciate the question. So one of the things, before I give my answer, I'm going to give a ton of prefaces during this show, guys, just so you know, because one of the things that I hope to do during this show is kind of expand the context, and or let me say this, add context to a lot of the conversations that are being had in society, and then expand on them and kind of put my little twist on it. So with that being said, to answer your question, Laura, I don't think, or let me say this, it's a two-part answer. So the first part is that the problems that we have in society, they didn't just start with President Trump in terms of our inability to unite to this point, to the level of which I'm speaking, right? There's levels of unity. There's everything. I believe that everything's on the spectrum, right? There's no absolute statement, you know, everything. There's levels of unity in this country that are great, right? So, but to the level that I'm speaking of, where we no longer have, you know, the things that divide us along the lines of like racism and, you know, bigotry and xenophobia, et cetera. So with that being said, I believe that those problems existed in this country before Donald Trump. I see Donald Trump as a symptom of a root issue. Okay. And so I don't blame Donald Trump for any of the issues that we're currently facing in society in terms of our inability to communicate with one another effectively, or our inability to unite at the highest level. Now, in addition to that, I want to add that I think that Donald Trump, currently in his role, you mentioned his inability to effectively communicate. Based on, you know, some of the things I've read about from some of his supporters, and people who grew up in parts of this country that are predominantly supporters of Donald Trump's ideals and his values, and that type of, you know, world, I guess, he speaks very relatable. His speech is very relatable to them. In terms of communication, he speaks in he makes very broad generalizations. And a lot of those broad generalizations play into some of the fear that was instituted in this country many years ago to support systems of white supremacy, systems of socioeconomic oppression, you know, for not only people of African descent in this country and other ethnic minorities, but also for poor Americans of European descent. And there were certain things and ideals that this country were built on, if we're being honest, that were just bad, you know, just to be frank and blunt, and bad in the sense that they were created that way for someone's gain. I'm sorry, for a group or a small segment of people's gain. And most of the time, these were people who were wealthy landowners, if we want to go way back to the origins of this country, and eventually politicians, et cetera, and wealthy landowners and men and always, you know, European American men. So if you think about the foundations of this country, everything that we're seeing and we're discussing in society right now is literally symptoms of those root causes. So I always like to bring that context when I'm asked those questions. So I hope that answers your question. And I hope it makes sense, Laura. And I'm gonna let you back in. I put you on mute there for a second, but I'm gonna let you get back in to see if you have a follow-up question or anything you'd like to say to close out.
Yeah, I really appreciated your answer. I just felt like, you know, with President Obama, there is a sense in that he just had this winning way with words that was always an appeal to unity, in my opinion, just his ability to sort of like translate from one side of the aisle to the other. And in this case, it just kind of seems pretty polarizing. So anyway, that's why I asked that question.
Thank you. Thanks for calling, Laura, and I appreciate the question. It's always good hearing from you and talking to you. I look forward to doing it more later. We'll talk soon.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. Bye. So just to also add to what Laura just said, and her perspective is valid, and I appreciate it and I respect it, you know, in terms of, you know, what she said about President Obama and how she felt that he was able to bring people together in a more effective way than what she feels that President Trump is able to do. But for me, as I step back and I look at the whole political landscape, one of the things that I notice and one of the things that I always think to myself and one of the things that I always question is that I listen to people from all, you know, sides of I know we all do, right? We all listen to people from all sides. But for me, when I say I listen, I empathize with people from all political, you know, along the political spectrum. I empathize with everyone. And what I mean by that is I believe that everyone gets behind whatever political person they get behind because they believe that that person is speaking to them, is speaking to their needs, their wants, their concerns. I don't think that anyone is choosing the person that they're following politically to hurt anyone else. I believe that they're doing it because they believe that that person is the best person to speak to their ideals. So with that being said, when someone says, you know, that they believe that President Obama, you know, was better at so-and-so or such-and-such, there's someone else on the flip side that's saying President Obama was horrible at that very same thing. And I find that fascinating. I'm always, you know, I find perspective fascinating just in general. It's like, man, you know, we can look at the same exact thing or we can look at or hear the same exact thing and we will all process it totally differently. So I find that fascinating. And I just want to, you know, just share that that's kind of how I look at things. And kind of how I evaluate and just process everything. I just find it fascinating how that happens. So I want to jump into another ideal or belief that I have before I jump to the next caller. We have a few callers on the line that I'm going to jump to here in a second. But another ideal that, or I'm sorry, another belief that I have is that we have to learn our way out of the issues and challenges we face. We have to learn our way out of the issues and challenges we face. Like Albert Einstein has a quote that I always, you know, refer back to, and it's this: we cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. Let that marinate a little bit. We cannot solve our problems with the same thinking we used when we created them. So one of the things I like to say all the time is that everything that we see that manifests itself in this world outside of nature was man-made. It started with our thoughts, right? Man or woman, right? It started with our thoughts. Thoughts are things. Everything that's physical in the physical form, it started with a thought and a human's mind. So with that being said, solutions to those things all the problems that have come about because of the way we've designed, you know, society, the systemic structures and the design, right? So, you know, people say all the time, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. For me, that's how I feel about politics. And a lot of times people get offended with me and because they don't have my worldview, whereas someone disagrees with me, I don't get offended. I respect it. I empathize because I know that based on, you know, everyone's perspective is based on their ideals, the indoctrination of how they were raised, as well as what they've learned and unlearned as an adult. So based on my ideals and values, my indoctrination growing up, and what I've learned and unlearned as an adult, I've decided that politics divides us. And I've decided that, well, before that, I've decided that I don't want to put energy into anything that's divisive. And politics is one of those things. So and it's inherent that in the political, the way that politics was set up and the way it was designed by man, right? Specifically in America, by men of European descent that were wealthy, and it continues to kind of play out that way in a lot of instances. No matter the ethnicity, it's usually people of means who get into politics and move up the ranks. But with that being said, the divisiveness that I feel like that we are all witnessing right now is par for the course. You know, I always giggle when people say, you know, things aren't what they used to be. And what I always think to myself is, no, they actually are. You just weren't around to witness it. Like there's something in our way of being that people say all the time, you know, things aren't what they used to be, you know, or back in the day, it was like this, as if back in the day or you know, years ago that there was this level of unity. And the reality is things are actually better in terms of, you know, how we treat one another, in terms of our empathy towards one another, in terms of our ability to understand one another. Things have always progressed in terms of humanity. So with that being said, as long as politics continues to be a debate-based game, us versus them, red versus blue versus green versus whatever other color or faction, there will always be divisiveness. There will always be my guy or gal is better than your guy or gal. There will always be divisiveness. So for me, you know, I feel like, again, we have to learn our way out of the issues that we face, or we're going to continue to do the same things over and over, expecting different results. So that's just another belief I have. Let's go to the next caller. The next caller, let's see, you have a phone number ending in 8380. Please share your name and where you're calling in from and your question or perspective.
Hey, how you doing, Scott? This is Palmer.
How you doing, Palmer?
Palmer,
good to hear from you.
Say that again. What'd you say?
I said it's good to hear from you. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he told me to give you a call, join in the conversation. We were talking about Moonlight, the movie.
Yes.
And did you have a question? You said you wanted to talk about that. I didn't know where you wanted to begin, or did you have something specific that you wanted to ask me about my view on that?
Sure. I'm actually going to do a segment on that towards the end of the show. I don't know if you can hang around for that, but here's what I'll ask you to do. You know, yeah, we can get into it right now. You know, we don't have to go into a particular order. So let's do that. Let's talk about that. So basically, we're just kind of jumping around to the in the media part at this point. I already planned on talking about Moonlight, and I will get into it in more detail and when I get to that segment in terms of my commentary on it. But I'll go ahead and ask Palmer what I wanted to ask him, because I was scrolling through social media, and Palmer is someone who we've connected on Facebook, and this is our first time talking, but we connected on Facebook several months ago, and he's a member of the Race Haven Community Dialogue Group. And with that being said, he's someone who is very, you know, based on what I've seen through social media, I see Palmer as someone who's intellectually curious, someone who's not afraid to, you know, question things. And typically, you know, people like that, you attract one another, and that's how you find people who think like you or think similarly in terms of that. And I've, you know, gained a lot of Facebook friends who are like that. So with that being said, you know, there's things that Palmer writes that, you know, resonate with me, that he shares on social media that resonates with me. There's things that he shares that challenges me that I want to research more about. And I appreciate that. But and one of the things that he shared recently, he said that he began to write to watch Moonlight, the movie that recently won the Best Picture Oscar. And he couldn't get through it, and he felt like it was serving the homosexual agenda. And you can correct me if I'm wrong in a moment here, Palmer. I'm just kind of giving our listeners some background. His commentary basically was how, you know, they tried to fool him and those who are heterosexual into watching a movie that, you know, was based on the coming of age tale of a young African-American male who was homosexual and all the things that he went through. And Palmer wasn't able to get through it. But in addition to that, he stated some things about, you know, an agenda that was had. And I wanted to ask, I wanted to get him on, you know, and I told him I would be talking about this topic today. So since I have you, Palmer, I want to ask you when you and if you can, you know, we're going to briefly get through this and then I'll give some more commentary. But just very briefly, can you just share, you know, your perspective on what you believe the homosexual agenda is and why, you know, this real, I guess, what I would believe or say is a reality for many Americans in terms of the homosexual Americans who are among us, who've come up and had to face the challenges that the young man faced in that movie. Why was it so hard for you to accept that being on the big screen? And what agenda do you think is behind that?
Okay. Excuse me. Well, first of all, I don't think I was so much fooled as it was late at night and I was at Redbox. I was at Walmart. And I wasn't tired, so I said, let me grab a movie. And I remember somebody talking to me about Moonlight. And I was like, okay, here's that movie Moonlight. But they didn't tell me what it was about. So I won't say that I was fooled as much as I was just not expecting what I saw. So when I got the movie, I'm looking at the movie. I'm like, okay, I don't see where this is Academy Award. I see some pretty, you know, it's an indie. You know, it's an independent movie. But I didn't see any great acting. So I'm wondering where the Emmy nod or the Best Picture nod is coming from. So as I'm watching the movie, I'm seeing this kid that really doesn't, he really seems to be disconnected. Then I see this guy coming in, and he's taking a liking to this kid, but he's a dope dealer. And I'm seeing a contradiction because he's very conscious. And that's kind of, you know, that was kind of puzzling to me. Why is this conscious guy selling drugs? It was a contradiction. And I've seen, I'm from Chicago, I've seen a lot of drug dealers. And you don't see that consciousness in drug dealers. So the movie was kind of off to me from the beginning. His level of concern towards this child was kind of unreal. And so
why did
so
you cut it off?
I cut it off because we got to the point, it got to the point where I said, oh, this is why they got the Academy Award or the Best Picture Award. It wasn't about how good the movie was. It wasn't about how good it was directed. It wasn't about the acting. It was about the subject. And I said, oh, this is why this got the award. It didn't get the, in my opinion, from what I saw, because I only saw half of it. It was just about at the halfway point. And I said, okay, the movie didn't get the award, in my opinion, because it was a good movie. It got the award because of the message that it was trying to convey. And the message was, it's the same message that I see in Empire and in The Have and The Have Nots. I think Empire is directed better than Have and The Have Nots. Have and The Have Nots is like a bad soap opera to me.
Well, let me just for the sake of time, Palmer, I apologize for cutting you off, but just for the sake of time, I want to keep it short and move in. I just want to make sure I understand what you're saying. So basically, you believe that the movie, it won the award because of the subject. Now, let's be clear. The subject was the life of a homosexual African-American youth growing up in poverty and all the social ills that surrounds that. And you believe that the award, they won the awards and the accolades because of what? When you say because of the subject, what are you saying?
Because of the content and because of an agenda that I see in America, in the music, in the clothing, where you have a rapper, Young Thug, that's wearing a dress on the cover, and this is being portrayed as normal.
What is the agenda? To narrow it down, what is the agenda that you see that people are pushing, that you feel like these industries are pushing? What is
feminization, the feminization of the male in America, not black male, but of the male in America, by via the black community.
Because okay, and now a final question.
Because
I'm
of
sorry.
The trendsetting of the black community.
Okay, and then my final question is, why do you think that that is an agenda? Why do you think who gains from that, the feminization of the male in America? Really quick, why do you think that's happening? That, just very briefly, why and who benefits from it? And your from your
kind
perspective.
Going back to what you said about how politics is a divisive measure, I believe that it's a divisive measure because it stands on shifting sand where the Constitution had a foundation. So when the foundation is weakened, then anything goes. So I think that the whole premise behind what's going on is that anything goes. We're accepting any and everything. There's no foundation.
Okay, Palmer.
There's no foundation, so therefore we're accepting anything. We're including anything. You feel this way, that's fine. Okay, the Constitution protects that view. So shifting sand doesn't have a foundation. It doesn't have ethics. It doesn't have morals. And I think that's what's needed for the foundation of this country.
Okay, final question, because this is something I'm truly curious about, and I hope that some other listeners will call in and give their perspective on this when I get to it a little bit later. But final question is, so you believe that it's because of, we're given a broad, casting a broad brush to the Constitution in terms of what's acceptable. But you didn't tell me why, why is it a problem? What you just said, I don't see a problem with including and spreading. So like, who's being hurt by this? And why do you think, like, why would someone or some entity want to intentionally feminize men in America through African-Americans? And who does it? So that's one thing. But let's just say we put that to the side. And what you said, if we're including, you know, we're letting, quote unquote, too much or whatever get through in terms of our morals and values, and we're accepting too much. And what I'm saying, based on accepting homosexuals, who does that hurt?
Well, the end is not as important as the premise, in my opinion. And I don't want to avoid what you're saying, but I think that would be a different conversation, because what we're dealing with is liberty. A dog has a leash. That leash is designed to keep the dog from getting hit, to go to the elements. If he gets caught out in the rain, he doesn't have a shelter to go to, from being kidnapped, from being attacked by other dogs, from being lost. There's so many things that can happen to that dog if he loses the leash of his liberty. Liberty doesn't mean do what you want. That's anarchy. And anarchy is unacceptable because the world is a vacuum. It abhors. The world abhors a vacuum. And so we have to come back into some type of reign of government. And so if there's no foundation, then there's no true liberty, because liberty has a leash.
Awesome. Thank you for that perspective, Palmer. I appreciate you calling in. I appreciate your perspective. All perspectives are welcome. Just very quickly, there's a couple of things that I want to expand on. Give my perspective on, and not to say, and again, because this is new, I want to make this point and elaborate and be very clear that when I give my perspective, this is not a debate show. This is a dialogue show. Okay. So in debate, it's right and wrong. It's winners and losers. In dialogue, it's sharing, right? It's sharing perspectives. There is no this way is the right way or that way is the wrong way. It's learning and sharing, right? And it doesn't mean that you have to agree with anyone. And it doesn't mean that what I'm about to say doesn't mean that Palmer is wrong in his perspective. So I just wanted to say that. And throughout this show, you'll hear me, and most of the time you'll hear me give a specific tenet of dialogue to support what I'm saying. But for now, I want to say that a couple of things that stood out to me. Palmer said that it was a contradiction between the dope dealer, and I saw the movie, just so everyone knows. I did see the movie, and I didn't know what I was going to see when my wife asked me to go see it. So I saw Moonlight just not having a clue what it was going to be about. So I was caught off guard in the sense that I had never saw a movie that was that highlighted the life of a homosexual person as the main character. However, I thought it was a great movie. I thought that the acting was good. I thought that the directing and the cinematography was creative and it was good, and it really brought the viewer in, and it was creative and it was very well done. It had context, it had layers, it had nuance, and I appreciated that. And I will say that some of the homosexual scenes, even though there was no all out sex scenes or anything like that, but there was a kissing scene and things like that. And because of my indoctrination, because of the way I was raised, that's still uncomfortable for me. Okay, I'm not afraid to admit that. That's still uncomfortable for me. However, I am empathetic and I am tolerant towards it. Okay, and I believe that any person, no matter their ideals in terms of the way they live their life, as long as they're not hurting other people, there's room for them. And I'm tolerant and I'm empathetic, and I believe they deserve freedom and liberty and justice just like anyone else. So with that being said, I appreciate it, and I understand what that means for, you know, homosexuals to be able to see their life story portrayed on the big screen and see their reality, you know, being examined, explored, and shared with the masses in that way. I'm here for that. I'm here for that. Because again, it goes back to, you know, for anyone who's uncomfortable with me saying that, it goes back to the common ground we established at the beginning of the show. One nation, indivisible. If you're not trying to hurt anyone, I support you. Is that simple? So with the contradiction of the dope dealer being conscious, you know, Palmer said in his experience, he's never met a conscious, you know, dope dealer. A friend of mine, who's also a friend of the show, Race Haven, Raed Kurt DeVoe, I call him Kurt, but Raed DeVoe, you know, he and I were talking about this because we both grew up knowing plenty of dope dealers, right? And in fact, we know that many dope dealers are actually good people. And from our perspective, there's a lot of people who sell drugs out of a sense of desperation. And there's so many factors that I don't have time to get into during this show, and I don't want to go that far, but we will eventually unpack all of that. But there's people who actually are good people. In fact, there's people that you know right now who never got caught that sold some weed when they were in high school or may have sold weed in college. But today as adults, they're looked at as outstanding people in the community. In fact, some of my best friends who, if you didn't know it, you wouldn't know they sold drugs in high school or in college because they are outstanding contributing people in society. But they may have been so poor that they wouldn't have got through college without selling weed. And I'm not justifying it because it's illegal. It's the choice they made. But what I'm saying is, it's hard to criticize someone without walking in their shoes and without sitting down and asking them questions and listening to the reasons why. That's the part about not making assumptions that I spoke about earlier. I said, don't make assumptions, ask questions. And I think that's something that's lacking in society. And I want this show to be a vehicle for that. Again, communication, right? So there's plenty of drug dealers that I know that are conscious, that are great people in society today, that may have sold weed, you know, when they were in, you know, high school or college, or some other drugs for that matter. There's some people, I know people who are CEOs right now of companies that are literally, I know a CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and I know plenty of listeners do as well, that used to sell drugs in high school. So, you know, that's just one thing. And then in terms of the feminization of males, I wanted to see if Palmer had anything to say about that in detail, about the gay agenda, which is something I hear a lot. And I'll get back into that a little bit later in the show. But it's something I find interesting. And I hope that you all noticed, instead of me just jumping down and putting down Palmer for his ideals that I don't necessarily agree with, I ask questions. That's dialogue. I wanted to get to the underlying beliefs of why he feels the way he does. And he shared that with me. So I respect it. And that's it. So moving on, we have another caller that wants to jump in. And what I want to do is, before jumping to that caller, I just want to share one other belief. Another belief that I have is a foundation to the show. And I kind of touched on it just a second ago. I believe that we have to work towards solutions collectively, together. You know, we grew up in a world where, you know, based on historical context and things I've learned, the reason why we do what we do in terms of separating things We separate everything and think that we have to separate things in order to understand them better, you know, in order to move forward. And that comes from scientists and people in the medical profession, you know, hundreds of years ago, as they were making advances in physics and biology and et cetera, they separated, you know, anatomy. They separated parts of the body to understand it better. And because they were able to understand things better through separating them, that was called analyzing, you know, separating things to analyze things became the norm. And that kind of pervaded society going forward. It was like, let's break things apart to understand them better. But through further learning, and I guess, you know, a different ideal, the ideal that resonates with me is that the idea of synthesizing, which is seeing and respecting how well things work when they're together. You know, the human body works best as a unit. Holistically, it works best, not separate. Synthesizing, coming together, honoring the interconnected parts in all the systems that exist in society, because it's just a series of systems and subsystems. The human body is a system, right? The same way that we talk about economics and, you know, social issues as systems. So everything is a system, the ecosystem, the solar system, all the way down to our body is a system. And then each organ in our body is a system within a system. So, you know, this is some systems thinking theory, which you'll hear me talk about often throughout the show as well. But one of the things that I believe in is in terms of communicating in a way that synthesizes, dialogue was designed for that. Dialogue is a tool that helps us communicate in a way that synthesizes in order to find solutions, brings us together, looks at how the health of the whole versus debate. What debate does is it separates us. Debate puts us in polarizing positions. Debate sensationalizes issues, and it keeps us apart. And we reward debaters, the great debaters. We learn debate in school. Our politicians have debates when they have town halls and events, right? So we live in a debate-based society. And this all has historical context. But what I've learned, what is more healthy is dialogue. And you and I, I'm sorry, if you're like me, you hear dialogue your entire life, but you just thought it was just a way of talking. And maybe dialogue meant to listen to one another a little bit more. But what I've learned, what I've since learned, is that there's actually some tools for dialogue. There's actually a framework for dialogue. And you'll hear me mention a lot of those things throughout the show. And just a couple of tenets that I love about dialogue versus debate. Dialogue is collaborative. Two or more sides work together toward common understanding. In contrast, debate is oppositional. Two sides oppose each other and attempt to prove each other wrong. I personally believe that all of our problems that we are currently facing can be solved through dialogue. However, they will also continue to be perpetuated if we continue to debate. So let's get the next caller in. I appreciate you holding. You've been with me for a long time, caller, at last four numbers, 8758. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Scott, this is Dalen out in Southern California. How are you?
I'm doing great, Dalen. It's great to hear from you. How are you doing today?
I'm well. And I have been here for a while, so Palmer got me somewhat, my mind going in a different direction than when I first called in. But that's the fun of this sort of thing, right?
Absolutely.
Well, hey, I had a couple of things. I mean, first, before I move on from what Palmer was saying, and I appreciated him sharing his views on the movie, but when he was talking about a dog on a leash being protective, I think we need to be very careful, especially when we're talking about societies or different individuals with different interests working together. There might be a real fine line between domestication and captivity, right? Mm-hmm. Where if an animal is kept on a leash to protect itself, that's domestication, but it gets real close to where someone is being kept captive against their will. And that's where, when we're looking about rule of law and when we're talking about dueling ideologies or even just values, is where and how do we draw those lines. So I think that would inform that. But going back to the original question with your caller from Georgia and with your initial statement that all problems can be solved through communication. And I, as generality with most people, I completely agree with you, but the one pinhole in that is that it really disregards the truth that there are actors with malintent out in the world. When I say malintent, I mean there are people that are trying to do wrong, and that might even just be from an angle of self-indulgence. And if we go way back in history, I think there's a good example that most people are aware of if you look at, say, Thomas Jefferson, where Thomas Jefferson has these great ideals and even recognized that there's a contradiction between him holding slaves and forwarding the ideas of liberty for all. You know, all men are created equal. But he adjusted his message for self-indulgence. He couldn't bring himself to give up his life of luxury. So I think one of the big challenges we have in true communication and dialogue is how do we not just identify those who have not even similar values, but those who don't have malintent, but how when we're communicating and trying to educate each other and get to that place of empathy, how do we overcome and drown out messages created by those with malintent? Because that's, to me, that's one of the biggest challenges, whether it's corporate actors or those that are trying to make money at the expense of whoever or whatever. They don't really care. They're just self-interested. But we have to overcome those. We have to identify those and get around those. And sometimes people can't completely understand each other and then just prioritize to do something that hurts the other person anyway.
Thank you for those. Thank you for that perspective, Dalen. Very needed. Again, I appreciate you adding that context and that nuance and allowing us to dig a little bit deeper into that thought process. So with that being said, I just want to expand by saying, in terms of my thought, and that every problem can be, you know, solved through communication. I think that we're saying the same things, in the sense that, one, I believe that the key is that you have common ground. You know, I think you have to start. When I say that, I'm saying that with the assumption that, you know, you're communicating with people that share common ground with you, that share a desire to get to that common ground, right? To work from that position, that foundation of common ground. That's the first thing. And then you said that at the end, you said that a lot of times some of our, you know, desire for self-interest or whatever may get in the way of doing what's right by other people. And it can end up hurting people. And that's where, again, that's where communication comes in. If you're hurting, you communicate that. And if someone is, you know, again, working towards the same ideals that you're working towards, if you have common ground with this person, then if their actions are hurting you, then that is solved by you speaking up and saying, I'm being hurt by your actions. And this is how it's not vibing, you know, with me and where we're trying to go. The other thing that I think is important, and a lot of times when I'm speaking, I hear people say to me, what you brought up is that, Scott, there's people in this world that just have bad intentions, right? They have bad intentions. They're just some bad people in this world. And for me, what I believe, a couple of things about that, again, about the communication piece. I always qualify by saying anything that doesn't hurt other people, right? So if we're communicating, you know, and we're working towards, you know, common ideals and common ground, as long as the way you want to live and be in this world isn't hurting other people, then we can work together. We can talk, we can build together, as long as it doesn't hurt other people. So I think that would speak to what you said about Thomas Jefferson living in that world of having slaves and justifying it. Because those slaves definitely, I'm sorry, I like to say, those enslaved Africans, I believe slaves objectifies, you know, humans. It's just become a term that doesn't really speak to the humanity. So I like to say enslaved Africans, because that's who they were. And in terms of, you know, chattel slavery. So with that being said, those people definitely, you know, rebelled and spoke out against it, right? But it was justified during those times because it was, you know, the institution or the system of slavery was supported. And it was a tool of a societal system called capitalism, right? A social structural system called, you know, the American economy, and not just America, but just the world economy. You know, slavery was justified because it was a means to an end. And it, you know, there was no respect. There was no mutual respect. There's a lot to unpack there. I know I'm putting some things out there that I'm not going deep into right now that I have very deep thoughts on, but just kind of putting it out there. But those things were definitely hurtful to people. So the premise behind what I'm talking about is that, one, you can communicate, and all communication towards common ideals is acceptable as long as you're not trying to hurt people. And as long as, you know, we're starting from common ground. So I appreciate that perspective, Dalen, and thanks for calling in. Let's see, we have another caller that is waiting and wants to jump in. And I'm going to jump over to you in just a moment here. I want to share another belief, foundational belief that I want to share. And that's this, that historical context is important. I want to share that it's important. You know, I hear people out here that say, you know, you have to stop living in the past, right? But unfortunately, we will never solve the problems of today if we don't get to the root, and the root lives in the past. We can't go forward without understanding the past. Now, that doesn't mean that we have to live in the past and wallow in the past in terms of allowing ourselves to be stuck there, which I feel like a lot of times people kind of extrapolate that when someone wants to use historical perspective. And I feel like sometimes people don't want to get into the complexity of adding, you know, historical context. And I just want to, you know, say that from my perspective, that's a wrong stance to take. It seems like a lot of times that comes up when people are uncomfortable with something that's being said. So they want to say that, well, you know, stop living in the past, or you can't live in the past. But that's contradictory, because it's impossible for any of us not to live in the past in some sense. You know, whenever you give reverence to, you know, your parents or your grandparents or your great grandparents, you're living in the past. Whenever you, you know, admire, you know, the great businesses that have been around for generations, you're living in the past. You know, when you, if you're someone who loves the Constitution that was created, right, when this country was formed, you're living in the past. So there's historical context that's needed, that guides us, and that there's answers and there's solutions by tapping into. So I encourage everyone to embrace historical context, and we will embrace historical context in this show. And I encourage all of you to ask yourselves, why do I get frustrated at times when people bring up things from the past? Why is my response, for those of you who have this response, stop living in the past? Just a question to ask yourself. But let's go to the caller. Last four digits, 9534. State your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, it's Andrew.
Andrew.
Hello.
How are you?
Not too bad, Scott. How are you?
Doing good. Thanks for calling in. Where are you calling from, Andrew?
Trinidad and Tobago, very far away. Carnival was just finished yesterday. Yeah,
oh,
an international call. There you go. And over the internet.
Awesome. Welcome.
I'm not too sure I actually have a question, but I did want to touch on two items that were mentioned in previous calls.
Share a perspective here. Go for it.
Sure. Okay. I like Dale's comment. And in a way, I also like Palmer's comment, because it talks about a perspective, and yes, they're valid. But when you start to analyze, you know, the complicated details of it, it in a way kind of becomes paradoxical, to say, for lack of a better word. To me, when I listen to Palmer and others who have an objection to homosexuality, I in my mind always come up with this notion or understanding of biological essentialism. Men are men, women are women, and heterosexuals are heterosexuals, and non-heterosexuals are non-heterosexuals, and white people are this, and Asians are this, and Indians are this, and black people are that. And it's an age-old understanding, which is kind of a crazy thought, that somehow, that if you're a chair, you will always be a chair. If you're a desk, you will always be a desk. And when you connect that to biological essentialism, it kind of sets that up. And sexuality is more complex than that. You know, there's no other species on the planet that has this issue with sexuality, nor race, nor religion, nor gender. But yet humans have this. This is all socially manufactured. You know, so I just wanted to put that out there to say there is this thing called essentialism where you are siloed into a particular category and you're supposed to behave in that category. And if it's biological, fine. If it's social, it's fine. I mean, whatever it is, it's that you are always supposed to occupy that silo. You know, so that's just an overarching thing, which is a completely separate topic as to why people are homophobic or other things. And by the way, I didn't watch the movie, so I'm just in here.
No, I appreciate that. Basically, what I hear you saying, Andrew, what I hear you saying, and it's a great segue for me to get into in the media, which is I wanted to touch on that in more detail. But what I hear you saying, Andrew, and adding to this dialogue today is that it's a social construct. The idea of, you know, that gender or sexual preference, you know, has value, any type of value in society, is a social construct. And as a social construct, again, I like to use the term systems. So it's a social system. It was man-made. It was created. And that goes back to something that I stated at the beginning, you know, in terms of everything in terms of society's structure, what we see physically, as well as the structures and the societal norms, were all man-made. And I believe that Andrew, and again, thank you for calling, Andrew, and I appreciate that perspective. But what Andrew was saying was that, you know, he just wanted to bring about the biological, you know, portion to understanding that, you know, biology is biology. Like he said, you know, birds are birds, humans are humans, you know, desks are desks once they're made, chairs are chairs once they're made. But there's a segment of people in society that believe that, you know, in terms of, and let's go into sexuality. They believe that sexuality is something that is absolute and is very, it's absolute, and it is one way. It's either one way or any other manifestation of it is just wrong. And they attach value, they attach religion and all types of things that support those beliefs. And just based on, again, some of the things I've learned, based on things I've learned and unlearned, as I stated at the beginning, you know, my understanding of these things have evolved because I understand the reason why we think the way we think. There's a book that I highly recommend called Out of Our Minds that goes into the history of how religion and social, you know, socioeconomic forces throughout the years have played a huge role. Education, all these things and the origins of the reasons why we think what we think. And when you are able to kind of think about why you think what you think, and I'm speaking for myself, it just opens your mind up to greater possibilities and understanding of the world around you. So with all that being said, I want to get into our final segment for the last 20 minutes here. Today's show will be 90 minutes or less. I didn't say that at the beginning, and I know some of you will listen to the podcast and you'll see that from the onset. But for those of you who are listening live, you're wondering, when is this going to end? It's going to be a 90 minute or less show, guys, and more like 90 minutes. So with that being said, I want to jump to our in the media, you know, segment, and there's two things I wanted to touch on. And the first thing is there was a Trump staffer, I believe Nancy DeVos is her name, the Secretary of Education in America. She made a comment as Trump, President Trump had the presidents of the various HBCUs around America, which are historically black colleges and universities, come in and they're signing some legislation to support them. And one of the things that came out of that was that Nancy DeVos made the comment that HBCUs were pioneers of school choice. And if you followed this, you've seen some of the pushback. And I just wanted to kind of just add to that for those of you who may have not seen that or heard some of the pushback against that. But what I wanted to add to that is, again, this is the importance of historical context. And this is also the importance of communication, because historical context for all of us is different depending on who you got it from, who you got your history from, or where you got your history from, and what the agenda was of the people who gave you that history. And because, again, we live in a country that there was a very clear agenda, you know, in the founding of this country, which was that European American men were superior to everyone. So therefore, all the societal, you know, structures and social constructs that were built on the ideal that European American men were superior to everyone. So all of the propaganda and everything that went out into society went to support that. Lots of stereotypes, lots of rules, lots of ugly things and bad things that have happened, and unfortunately, as well as our history. So what I've learned in my experience of doing this race-related work, as well as in the relationships that I've had, that my view on history is totally different than some of my friends who didn't grow up getting history the way I did, whether they be of the same ethnicity of myself or of different ethnicities. So with that being said, again, this is why it's important that we all continue to talk across ethnic lines to learn our history and be empathetic and listen and tolerant. And then when we hear things that don't vibe, we talk about it and we work it out the same way my wife and I. There's things that there's ideals that she holds because of the way she was raised versus ideals that I hold because of the way I was raised that force us to have, you know, competing values at times. But then because of communication, we're able to talk and work it out and create something new that we can both, you know, agree upon moving forward or come to some type of common respect and understanding. So with that being said, in terms of American history, we have a lot of work to do. The people need to tell this story because the history books, there's a lot that needs to be desired. So I say all that to say that the statement of the Secretary of Education clearly shows that HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities, are pioneers of school choice, as if they made that choice from a position of strength, from a position of a decision that was going to, or a position on equal footing as every other, you know, educational pioneer in America during those times. That's false. It's clearly false. And again, if anyone has a perspective, you can always call up or talk to us on the dialogue continues on Facebook and social media, or you can call the show or you can email me. But that is clearly false, because HBCUs, historically black colleges and universities, were out of necessity, because Americans of African descent who were descendants of enslaved Africans weren't accepted in mainstream European American colleges and universities. That's why it wasn't out of choice. It was out of necessity. And the thing that bothers me about that is that these people who are in the highest position in government in our country say these things. They are so misinformed, and there's currently no mechanism to hold them accountable outside of mediums like this. But there's no mechanism to hold them accountable that's going to touch all Americans. We have the traditional media, but then that's all clouded because, you know, the president says that certain things are fake news, right? So now it gives people who follow him, it puts that doubt in their minds that someone like, you know, on another news outlet that may challenge her, they may think, oh, it's because it's the liberal agenda and all these various labels and all this, again, this climate of us versus them that just keeps the waters muddy because of our society. Our debate-based society, there's reasonable doubt. That's why it's important that we just build through relationships. We build through relationships and we stop relying, in Scott's opinion, right, that we stop relying on politicians and the greater news media to be our primary and only source of facts and information. And we live in a great time where that's possible because of mediums like this, as well as, more importantly, just the friendships that are being developed across ethnic lines just because of how our society has evolved, because of segregation has ended. I'm sorry, because of integration and because segregation has ended, et cetera. And we're able to go to schools and mingle with one another, and it's not against the law anymore, et cetera, and all the advancements that have been made in society. So we just have to continue to have these conversations and continue to talk out loud and continue to communicate. Again, America, we need to talk. Let's talk. And the final thing is, my comments about Moonlight and the backlash that I've seen in the African-American community, There's two sets of backlash themes that I've seen. And let me say, before I say that, there's plenty of people that I've heard in the African-American community who love the movie, who supported the movie, who agree with the critics, and more importantly, just empathize and understood that what that meant for Americans who are homosexual, and especially African-Americans who are homosexual, to have a piece of their story, for many of them, that was so real for them to be shown and recognized on that stage. It's huge. I get it. I'm happy for them. So there was plenty to support it. In terms of the backlash that I've heard in the media, social media, on the radio, for callers, people calling up on, you know, mainstream radio stations, there's people who are upset. There's two reasons. There's a segment of people who said that, you know, African-Americans only get recognized by the Oscars for playing degrading roles. They point out Denzel Washington winning for playing a corrupt cop in Training Day. They said that Halle Berry was, I didn't see Monsters Ball, but they said that she was, you know, for the lack of a better term, a slut. And that's why she won for playing the role of a slut. And I don't know if that's true because I didn't see the movie, so I can't add any context to it. But they're saying that African-Americans win for playing the degrading roles and not, you know, I guess, roles of leadership or heroes or sheroes or, you know, positions of power, et cetera. So they said that Hidden Figures, which also was up, should have won for that reason. It showed these women, which was, again, another amazing movie. I loved Hidden Figures. But here's what I have to say about that. One, that I don't believe that all the power of what's valuable and what's not valuable is held in winning an Oscar. I don't believe that because Hidden Figures didn't win an Oscar that it was all of a sudden somewhat not as meaningful for people in the African-American community. And more importantly, for all Americans. That's the American story. Hidden Figures was valuable for all Americans. Just because it didn't win an Oscar, it doesn't take away. Like, anyone can take their kids to see Hidden Figures. So that's one thing. The other thing is, we have to make room for the complexity of the African-American experience, for all experiences in the media and in the entertainment in Hollywood and in the movie you know, medium, right? It can't just be this singular African-Americans shown in this light of, you know, superheroes and success stories, right? Because we're complex as human beings. The human experience is really complex. And we have to be open to that. We have to be open to the full range of complexity being shown. We have to make room and space for all of that. I don't think that hurts anyone. I don't think that that takes away from your values that you're teaching your children. I think it just expands our minds for the possibility so that we can empathize and have tolerance for the greater range of human experiences. I think that's healthy. The second pushback that people gave was, I heard a woman actually say that we need African-American men to start being men again, right? As if this movie is turning people homosexual and all the various, you know, manifestations of homosexuality in the media and in, you know, in television and movies that are coming out now are all of a sudden going to just make heterosexual people like myself say, you know what, that looks like a great idea, as if it's a choice, as if it's not a biological thing. And I know there's some debate about that, but my belief is that it's biological. Human sexuality is a spectrum. There's a spectrum. Most everything is a spectrum. It's on a spectrum. Okay, if I'm saying anything that challenges you, please be open to doing some more research. Don't get mad. Ask questions. Hang in there. Hold the tension. Someone posted on Facebook. This was the post. It said it was an African-American male, and his post was this. This homosexual agenda is a powerful lobby. It's been in effect for decades, and they have won. They have taken the top position of pop secular culture. They have infiltrated the media, education, entertainment, sports, politics, business and commerce and religion, all areas of human activity. They have taken something once known as abnormal behavior and turned it into something not only normal, but preferred. If you are still thinking that Satan is not real, then you're a fool. Then you are a fool. The devil is busy and the church is asleep. I will never let someone convince me to watch that mess or anything like it. I fear for the kids. We have to fight to contend for the truth. But the world makes that nearly impossible. Man, that was heavy. That was heavy. That was heavy. I have friends and family that feel that way. And from my perspective, based on what I've learned and unlearned, that also hurts me to read that, because they speak of homosexuality as if these aren't real human beings who live this, as if they're not, they're less human than the person who wrote it, as if they don't have the ability to make, to live and manifest their reality in this world the same way as the person who wrote it. As if the way they were wired and the way they were born, their God-given sexuality and the way they were born, for it to be called a sin, and they have to walk with that weight and that pressure of that social construct. For me, it saddens me because I empathize. Because you got to understand, one of the foundations of this show that I didn't get to, one of the principles of this show, and I want to ask if we have common ground on this, is that tolerance and empathy are the cure for prejudice, bigotry, and discrimination. You can't be prejudiced, you can't be a bigot, and you can't discriminate if you're at this, if you're exercising tolerance and empathy. They don't go together. They don't go together. Tolerance and empathy is the opposite. It's the antithesis, and it's the cure for prejudice, bigotry, and discrimination. Prejudice, bigotry, and discrimination hurt people. We will never be one nation, indivisible, if we're hurting people. Because hurt people hurt people. They lash out. They fight back. Are homosexuals less than people? No, they're humans. They're humans. So how can I disparage someone for showing prejudice or bigotry or discrimination in any other social construct in this world that we live in, but then myself exercise prejudice against people because of their sexual orientation or discriminate against them because of their sexual orientation? It doesn't go together. So I just want to ask people who are listening to this, call up next Wednesday. Continue the dialogue on social media, but more importantly, call up next Wednesday, because I want to know. I want to know, because some of the people who are here speaking like this, I've also seen them criticize other people for displaying prejudice in this world, bigotry in this world, discrimination in this world. So I don't know how they can live together in your worldly ideals and the way you interact with the world. For me, if you believe in those things, if you believe that those things are bad, then it should cover the whole spectrum of, you know, being bad against anything that invades society that doesn't hurt other people. That doesn't hurt other people. If someone's out here hurting other people, that's different. But the last time I checked, homosexual people who are pursuing homosexual relationships with other people who share their sexuality, they're not hurting me. They're not hurting any other American or any other person in the world, for our international listeners and callers. So again, if you're listening and I'm making you uncomfortable, do we have common ground? Do we truly believe that the idea of one nation, indivisible, is important and that would make our society healthy? Do we believe that prejudice, bigotry, and discrimination are unhealthy for society? Do we believe that tolerance and empathy are healthy for our society? And if we exercise tolerance and empathy across the board for the human experience in every way that it manifests itself in ways that don't hurt others, then how can we speak badly and speak down to homosexual people? How can we say that they are a walking sin is pretty much what, you know, how it was referenced in that quote from Facebook that I just shared. That's something I don't understand. It's something I'm very curious about. It's something that I'm looking to gain, you know, deeper understanding about the whole gay agenda. I see it all the time and I just don't get it. You know, Palmer mentioned the feminization of males as an agenda. I want to understand who benefits from this agenda and why did they create it? I just want to know your thinking. I don't agree with it, but I'm open to hearing. Because we can't, I don't think you and I will get closer together and come closer in terms of moving forward to make the world a better place if we don't listen to one another. So I'm open to listening. So with that being said, for, you know, anyone who's listening that is homosexual, that has to bear that weight, you know, I just want to let you know I empathize and, you know, that's tough. And I empathize that you have to bear that and hear that and see those themes throughout society. And I believe that it's going to get better. And you have an ally in me as someone that will always speak to your right to humanity and experiencing humanity with the same liberties and freedoms, both socially and in law, as everyone else. And I'm going to continue to speak towards that and fight for that and fight with you for that. And for those of you who don't agree, who say, I'll never listen to this show again because Scott feels that way, I just want to challenge you to hold the tension. Hold the tension. We're trying to make the world a better place for our kids and grandkids, right? Dialogue with me. Let's work towards common solutions. You may have some information that I didn't learn yet that may move me. I don't know, but share it with me. So with that said, I appreciate everyone listening. That's our time for today. Thank you, thank you, thank you for listening to the first Race Haven Live America We Need to Talk show. A special thank you to all of the callers. I really appreciate you calling in. Be sure to subscribe to the Race Haven podcast on the iPhone podcast app or Stitcher Radio app for Android so that you never miss the dialogue. And if you love this show, please leave us a review on the podcast and Stitcher apps. This will help our show gain more visibility and listeners. Also, we want to hear from you. You can email us at solutions@racehavenpodcast.com or join us on Facebook at Race Haven Podcast to continue the dialogue. You can also join our online chat community by joining the Race Haven Community Dialogue Facebook group. Also, please tell your friends about Race Haven, okay? Tell a friend if you enjoyed the show today. Tell them to listen to the recording. And to close out, I just want to share that a Race Haven is a safe place for people from diverse ethnic, religious, cultural, and political backgrounds to bring their race-based perspectives, questions, assumptions, frustrations, and experiences to engage in thoughtful, honest dialogue in an effort to transcend race and unify America. Remember, we are all smarter when we think together. Love y'all. Peace.
Thanks for listening to the Race Haven Radio Show and Podcast. Be sure to visit www.racehavenblog.com to comment and learn more.